Champions Club. Champions Club. Is that some cute new version of the Shield?
I mean, it must be because I don't see the lunatic fringe out here.
No.
I see the architect.
Yeah.
I see the big dog.
There he is.
And I see what's that name we what's that thing we call him? It's on the tip of my tongue. It's it begins with an
should
N.
Should I?
Word we use for him that starts with an N. Oh no.
Nerd!
Oh, thank God.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I was worried there for a second. I thought maybe we were getting racist Finn as a new gimmick. This is episode 530 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, January 14th, 2018. I don't even know what year it is anymore. 2018, I am the Solid Monster. Only 2 weeks away from the Rumble of Royalty, as Woken Matt Hardy would call it. So a lot to get to also, a lot of injury news, some sad news, a lot of big news though. So we have a lot to pack in here this week. First of all though, a couple of people have asked me if they could cash in their Audible link, as I know quite a few of you actually did this past week, on that new Fire and Fury book by Michael Wolff. If you're into reading about that kind of stuff, it's still the number one bestseller last time I heard on the Amazon list. You can get that audiobook for free. It is available through Audible, and you can get it using our free Audible trial link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can try the service out free for 30 days, and as part of your trial, you get one free book of your choosing. And Fire and Fury just so happens to be one of them, and that seems to be the talk of the town right now. So if you want a non-wrestling book, and that happens to be something you're interested in, absolutely, cash in, get it for free. If you prefer a wrestling book, might I recommend Slobberknocker by Jim Ross, which just came out a few months ago. Or maybe the Justin Roberts book, Best Seat in the House, which is a very insightful look at what it's like working behind the scenes for WWE, the good, the bad, the ugly, all that stuff. It's an interesting read. So use our link to get that book. Speaking of Justin Roberts, my interview with him has been nominated for Media Interview of the Year in the 2018 Wrestling Radio Awards. Actually, the interview I did with Brandi Rhodes was nominated for Female Interview of the Year. And this podcast right here that you're listening to for the fourth year running has been nominated for Show of the Year. So if you would like to vote in any of those categories and show some support for the Sound Off, you may do so. I believe voting opens later tonight. Last I checked, it wasn't open yet, but by tonight or tomorrow morning, it should be open, and it will be for the next several weeks. So you can vote once a day, every day, I believe. Just go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. If it's not up yet, the ballot should be up soon, and you can show your support for the Sound Off there. If you want to make a PayPal donation, which is the easiest and quickest way to support this show, and we had a really good year last year, I'm hoping to follow up with an even better 2018, and we're off to a pretty good start so far. You can go to thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out, as you know. And just to go through roll call here, we have thank yous to dole out here. Shout-outs for John, Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, a tag team that will hopefully never go Michaels and Jannetty on me. Hopefully they'll stay together forever. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Out of Control Cody Thomas. The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Raymond the Mountie Medina. Mass Grave. Micah Harshaw, big supporter of the show. Micah's got a new YouTube channel called Movies, a Podcast. Pretty simple name. He covers movie news, production rumors, box office results, some TV news, a whole lot of stuff. Mike is a good dude and a big-time movie buff, so he knows his stuff. And I swear I didn't try to rhyme there on purpose. It just came out that way. But check him out. Give him a sub on his channel, youtube.com/Micah Harshaw, All one word. Check him out there. Also, thank you to Damn Straight Michael Dorsey for his support, The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eicher, The Show Off Corey Van Dam, The Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, The Columbus Destroyer John Sterniker, John More Money More Problems Morin, Stephen Foulmouth Fowler, Dan the Man Larson, Gabriel Dirty Sanchez, Faith Hard Knocks Harvey. And I have one more shout out here. I wanted to just mention this here before I move on. I want to give a shout out to Terry in Houston. She and I have interacted sporadically over the years by email. She listens to the show. She was diagnosed a while back with breast cancer, which has since returned and spread, and it's horrible. And obviously I know about that very well. What my own mother's been going through lately is something I don't wish on anybody. These side effects, things are just really, you know, bad right now. We had a little code yellow incident the other day, started her on a new drug, and she had a reaction to it. It was touch and go there for a while, but Terry wants everybody listening, all the female listeners and even their husbands and their boyfriends listening, to be sure to get checked. That's something she wanted me to make sure I mentioned here. It is the best way to fight this. Early detection is the key. And Terry wants to mention her husband, Nick, who I'm sure is scared as hell right now, but you've got quite the fighter over there. I don't think she's going anywhere anytime soon. So best wishes to the both of them. I'm rooting for you. You know that. All the best. And get checked, as she said. Very important. The Royal Rumble pool in our Facebook group, our private Facebook group, which you are not, if you are not a member of, you can apply for membership. You still have time to enter the annual, this is the fifth annual, Royal Rumble Facebook pool being run by Zach Holker. And big shout out to Zach. He puts a ton of effort and a ton of time into organizing this every single year. And I can't thank him enough for that. We are right around, I think, 1,700 entrants or so, which is a lot of people. So it is not too late to get in, though. You can still enter right up until a few hours before the pay-per-view on Rumble Sunday. So you have two more weeks to enter. For those of you wondering when your numbers are going to be issued, that's next Saturday. So less than a week, on the 20th, I believe, is when Zach is going to post everybody's numbers. Everyone's random Rumble numbers will be posted up in the group. You can still apply, though, up until a few hours before the show, but don't wait too late, and get in, because it's a lot of fun. We'll have a whole, like, dozens of pools. All the winners ultimately go into this final ultimate Rumble pool. And I pick, what are we doing, top three, I think? Three or five, I think top three winners will be chosen at random. Some prizes will be issued, so it's a lot of fun. My Wrestle Kingdom 12 review, it's now up over 60,000 views, which is really cool. Never did I think that a New Japan video that I did would do that kind of number, which I think is a pretty good sign of as far as interest in that product right now. If you missed it, head to the YouTube channel. You can watch the full review there. Kenny Omega signed a new deal with New Japan this week that will keep him locked up there through the end of January of 2019. So he is not going anywhere, which me and I like that too. I don't think there's any need for Omega to, you know, go to NXT or WWE. I know some people would like to see him go there, and I got a couple of emails from people when Roman Reigns made that comment a few weeks ago about how I'm the best wrestler in the world, and Kenny Omega has since responded. Basically said, there's no way Roman Reigns can possibly believe that to be true. So they've been not so much going back and forth, but Omega responded to what he said. And I had a couple of emails from people saying, oh, maybe they're setting up a match. Maybe it'll be Roman Reigns against Kenny Omega, you know, at the big pay-per-view like WrestleMania next year. First of all, no. Second of all, I don't want to see Kenny Omega right now jump to WWE. He's got a ton of momentum. He's doing really well for himself over there. I don't think he leaves there until he wins the big one, which he hasn't done yet. I don't see any need for him to come to WWE. I think he's great right where he is, just like those guys, you know, Okada and all them. You know, why would they leave? Why would they go anywhere? It doesn't make sense. So I think it's cool that he's sticking around for at least another year. And what I also like about it, selfishly, is that it makes one of my potential predictions that I made on the show last week. It gives it that much of a better chance of becoming a reality now if he actually ends up beating Okada at Wrestle Kingdom next year to win the IWGP title. Although I suppose, you know, Wrestle Kingdom being at the beginning of January, if his contract is running out at the end of January next year, He'd have to sign another deal before that would happen, because I doubt, you know, Ghetto would put the belt on him if his contract was expiring a few weeks later. And that, I don't know. You know, a year is a long time. A lot could happen. Would Omega sign another year through 2020? I don't know. Yeah, it's too early to say that. But Omega's also appearing on the Cody Rhodes Young Bucks All-In show, which now has a date, Saturday, September 1st. One of my other predictions was a Cody-Kenny Omega main event for that show once they finally do the Bullet Club split, which they seem to be building to in New Japan. No location announced yet. They're still teasing soon that they'll make the announcement, I guess, on one of those Being the Elite shows as far as where it's going to be held. I keep reading Chicago is the front runner for it. I'm hoping for Las Vegas myself. If they do it in Vegas, I'll be there. I haven't been to Vegas in a few years. I've been looking for an excuse to go back. So for me, that would be a good one. So I'm pulling for Vegas. No offense to all the Chicago listeners out there. Let's talk about the big story, though, because this was quite the shocking story that came out of nowhere this week. And that is, of course, the end of the career, at least the in-ring career in WWE, of Paige. In a story broken by PWInsider.com, which has since been confirmed by The Torch and by Ryan Satin, I saw over on Pro Wrestling Sheet. So, you know, these are people that are connected, and they have their own sources, and they've all now verified this as being accurate. Backstage at Raw last Monday, Paige, who's only 25 years old, she's got all, you know, her whole career ahead of her. Paige was told that she will not be cleared to return to the ring after her latest injury, which was the one at the Nassau Coliseum a few weeks ago, where Sasha Banks gave her the double kicks to the back, and it looked, from the footage, it looked like she may have suffered a stinger. She was struggling to get back to her feet and stumbling around like she had no you know, energy to even stand up straight, and she was feeling her fingers to get feeling back into them. It was very scary, and they called off the match, helped her to the back. And so with that, ends her in-ring career, at least in WWE. Like you know, Daniel Bryan, she could always leave when her contract expires and go wrestle somewhere else, but it just won't be with WWE. And that is the second WWE career to come to an end in a match at the Nassau Coliseum. Unless there's more that I'm just not thinking of. There's two that come to mind. The first one being Draws back in 99 when he got paralyzed, and now Paige. And both of them in non-televised matches, because the Draws match was a dark match before a SmackDown taping, and this was a house show match. So that sucks. WWE has not commented on any of this yet. At least as of the time that I am recording this, they have not said anything. They have not posted a statement on the website. Paige has only posted a very vague comment on her Instagram, which I think she posted before the news broke, and it said, "The comeback is always stronger than the setback." But there's been no denial from her. There's been no denial from WWE. I mean, this is, look, if this isn't true, this is a pretty big, you know, false report here by saying this woman's career is over. And so you would think that by this point, to kind of tamp down on this, if it wasn't true, they would have said something, and there's been no denial. There's been nothing from either side. She had already been announced for the Women's Royal Rumble match. That's now out the window. The most likely role for her, I would think, would be as a manager for Absolution, at least for a little while, until Absolution goes away. Because look, I mean, how long could that go on for? That can't go on for that long, her being a manager for them. Frankly, I think at this point, it would be better that Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville go their separate ways. Mandy is going to be a star no matter what because, you know, she's actually not that bad. I think she'll probably improve over time. And she looks like, I mean, for God's sake, she looks like a goddess. She's got that look. She's going to be a star no matter what. Sonya Deville could be something. But I watched Shayna Baszler on NXT this week and I thought, Sonya who? like who's that? You put the two of them side by side. I'm not basing this on looks. You put the two of them side by side between the two of them. Who looks more like a legit badass? Who looks more like somebody who could kill you if she wanted to? There ain't nobody picking Sonya Deville over Shayna Baszler. So, as far as the future of Sonya Deville, at least in that the whole MMA fighter gimmick, I don't know. I don't know that it has legs long term. But I was also thinking, you know, the thought of having three women named Sonya, Shayna, and Sasha at some point on the main roster. It's like, say that five times fast. But as far as Paige, you know, Paige as a manager, it doesn't really work, I don't think. If she can't get physical, if she can't take bumps, if they really limit what she can do, I don't see how her being a manager could be a long-term thing. You have somebody like Corey Graves. Corey Graves was told that he would never be cleared. He was he was older than Paige, a little bit older when he got told that his career was over. But that was a tough transition for him, but he managed to transition into being an announcer. And he's taken to the role very well. Paige, yeah, Paige could be a good promo when she wants to be. She's a good talker when it comes to trash talking and promos, but as an announcer, I don't see it. She doesn't seem like a natural announcer to me. They don't even have any full-time female announcers in the company. So, aside from being like a trainer, some kind of female ambassador to the company, I'm not really sure what the future holds for her going forward. She could always end up in like a GM role if they want to get her on TV, like AJ Lee was. So, believe me, they'll find something for her to do. But it's just a matter of finding the right role for her. If she wants to stay, if she wants to stick around, I have no idea how much time is left on her contract. If she would want to get the hell out of there and go wrestle somewhere else, we don't know. But, you know, I see a lot of hate directed towards Sasha Banks for what happened. People blaming her for all of this. First of all, that is beyond absurd. Like I said at the time when I saw the fan cam video of what happened, there was nothing about the kicks that looked like anything we haven't seen Sasha do in a million other matches. And nobody's gotten hurt before, as far as I know. I mean, the fact that Paige had major neck surgery over a year ago, she admitted on Lillian Garcia's podcast that her own doctor told her she should not be wrestling anymore. She admitted on Steve Austin's podcast when she did the show, remember that a couple of years ago? That she had scoliosis and that her spine is shaped like a question mark and it could cause problems for her at some point down the road. Austin basically asked her and she's like, yeah, it could definitely cause problems down the road. So you take all of these different factors into consideration here. This wasn't just likely. This was inevitable that this was going to happen. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. And if it wasn't Sasha Banks, it could have just as easily been Alicia Fox giving her a backbreaker. It could have been Nia Jax giving her a Samoan drop. I mean, Paige was flat out told, you should not be doing this. You're on borrowed time. You know, she's not a part-timer like Brock Lesnar, who comes in and wrestles a handful of matches each year. She's not The Undertaker, who does one friggin' match every single year. Should be doing none, but she's not a part-timer like that. She's on the road just like everybody else is, 4 days a week. Just like the rest of them. I mean, what are they supposed to do? Treat her with kid gloves for the next 20 years of her career? What I find interesting, and I haven't seen this mentioned, but what I find interesting is that if you remember, when there was this whole row between WWE and Paige, and she was still with Del Rio, and there was this whole big brouhaha over whether or not they thought she needed neck surgery. She said she did. She was going to find her own doctor, and WWE wasn't happy about that. They felt that she didn't need neck surgery. Remember that? There was a whole fight over that. And ultimately, she had the surgery. Now, I don't know what Dr. Maroon here found on her latest tests that made him make this call, if it's a new injury or what. But if the potential for injury here is so great and so catastrophic that they ended this woman's career at 25 years old, I just find it odd that WWE didn't think that she needed surgery in the first place. Now they're saying, well, we're not ever going to clear her to wrestle again. That just seems like a strange leap to me, unless there's a new injury at play here. So that's I find that a little strange. But yeah, the fact is, she worked hard to come back from neck surgery. She obviously had a very, I think a good word for it would be tumultuous year in her time off, to say the least. And it sucks. It sucks that this happened to her. Here's a woman who's been wrestling since she was, what, 13 years old? She's wrestled her own mother before. You can find all the videos on YouTube, her as a kid wrestling her own family. It's all she ever wanted to do. It's all she's ever known. All the people I see on social media making snarky comments at her expense. You know what? Let them have something taken away from them that is that important to them. Let's see how they feel. Because whatever stuff she did last year, all that crap that she was in the middle of, or whatever she may have done backstage when she was in NXT with other people, like, all that stuff had nothing to do with her getting injured. So you can think whatever you want to about Paige and how she's, you know, immature and all the mistakes she's made and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, like, that had nothing to do with her suffering a neck injury. I'd say try to show a little humanity. Keyword there being human. But I'm not sure some of these people are. There's another big story, potentially huge story, brewing right now as it relates to WWE's future television home. Their contract with USA Network does not expire until the end of 2019, but according to the latest Observer, WWE is looking to have their next destination locked in by May of this year, so only a few months from now. And the rise of WWE's stock price is very likely tied to expectations that their next TV rights deal will be significantly greater than their current deal. So if they end up not getting the kind of deal they're looking for, which they actually did not last time, it'll be very interesting to see where that stock price... I'm guessing that stock price goes down, not up, because the two are probably very, very much linked. But they, like I said, they expected to get a lot more last time, and that didn't happen. But this is why, though, when people ask, you know, why doesn't WWE just put Raw and SmackDown on their own network? People just can't understand, why don't you have your own network? Why not just put Raw and SmackDown on there? You would get all these people to subscribe, and you would get the number above 2 million, which is what they want. Wouldn't that boost subscriptions? It would. I can't tell you that it would go over 2 million. Boy, that would be embarrassing if they still couldn't get over 2 million if they put all their shows on their own network. But they would also be giving up, what, $200 million or more in TV rights money by doing that? I think people often forget that. They're like, well, just take the shows and put them on the network. Who cares? Yeah, sure. Why not just... Let's just give up on $200 million, $250 million payout that we get. Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, like, it would be suicidal. What, are you kidding me? Now, I don't doubt that at some point Raw and SmackDown will end up on the network, but I'm talking like years down the road. I mean, I don't think that's anywhere close to happening. They need that money. They build their entire year largely around the money they make off their TV rights. Now, the Sports Business Journal last year had reported on a meeting that Triple H had with executives from the Fox network. WWE and Fox have worked together before. Fox, if you remember, they aired a couple of Saturday Night's Main Event specials in 1992 after they got dumped by NBC because of low ratings. And so there's a reason they only aired two Saturday Night's Main Event specials in 92, because those didn't do too well either. And then we didn't see the show again until, what, 2006, I think it was. But Fox may be losing UFC. UFC signed this huge deal with Fox a number of years ago. They've been airing UFC specials on Fox and UFC shows on FS1 and some of the other networks. And there is the potential very soon that UFC may have to find a new TV home if they can't reach a new deal with Fox. If they feel they're not getting the kind of money that they are looking for, they could go elsewhere. And that's also an interesting story to follow. Now, if that happens, they're going to want to fill all those hours with other programming, not just on Fox, but on their cable stations, and that's where WWE all of a sudden can become very valuable. Now, you know, WWE has tons and tons and tons of programming. They have all of this programming and content that they produce that I'm sure a network like Fox, with all the channels they have, would love to be able to take and plug into all these different slots. Now, UFC could end up staying on Fox, but if they don't and WWE goes to Fox, the belief is that Monday Night Raw would end up airing on the Fox network itself, not FS1 or some other cable station. It would air on Fox, and that the show would be forced to go back to 2 hours from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. because in most markets, even here in New York, you know, WNYW, the local Fox affiliate here, they've had a 10 p.m. newscast since I was a kid. They've always had local news at 10 p.m. here on Channel 5, which is the Fox affiliate, and a lot of Fox affiliates all over the country have a newscast at 10 p.m., which would also mean no Raw overruns anymore, at least not every week. I mean, maybe they do them every now and again. I mean, you got baseball games and football games that go over sometimes, and they do delay the local newscast, but I think it wouldn't be like it is now, where Raw pretty much every week goes 5, 10, sometimes 15 minutes, you know, past 11 o'clock, sometimes longer. Those days would likely be over. It'd be like SmackDown, right? SmackDown right now on Tuesday nights, they don't have a SmackDown overrun. SmackDown doesn't go off the air at 10:05. There's a hard stop at 10 p.m. for SmackDown. And speaking of SmackDown, the belief is that SmackDown would probably end up not on Fox, but on FS1. But again, right now, this is all talk. It's all speculation about where things could be going. Just like the belief that Fox may want to buy WWE outright. That was part of this report, too. There could be interest in Fox potentially buying, you know, 100%, as much as 100% of WWE, so that they don't have to worry about renegotiating TV rights with them every few years. They could just buy the company and own the friggin' thing. Now, I still find it very hard to believe that Vince McMahon would want to sell, but you wave enough money in someone's face, right? It's like Ted DiBiase says, everybody's got a price. If somebody came to me and said, hey, here's a check for $10 million. I want the sound off. I mean, obviously, this is a terrible example. I'd probably give it to them for a lot less than $10 million. But point is, you never know how somebody is going to react when you wave a bunch of money in their face, right? So I can't picture Vince McMahon, who's still involved in the day-to-day of his company, just handing it off. What would he do? I mean, I guess they could keep him on. They probably would. They probably would want him on at least for a while. They wouldn't want, because, you know, Vince, everybody associates him with WWE, and oh my God, what would WWE be like without Vince McMahon? Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this right now who say, oh, it would be so much better, which we don't know. We can't say for sure that it would be. But you have investors, I'm sure, and people who don't even necessarily watch the product, but they follow the company, they know how successful it is, who probably would be very scared of, you know, a WWE one day without Vince McMahon. So, I don't know. My guess would be if anybody ever did buy it, they'd want to keep Vince on at least for a while just to run the thing. But it would be very different, you know, him not having full power over everything, as much of a micromanager as we always hear from people who have worked with him that he is. I just find it impossible that Vince could be working for someone else after all these years of working for himself and being his own boss and being, you know, the alpha male, that, you know, one day he would sell and stay on and sort of answer to somebody else. I just find that almost impossible to believe. I can't even picture that. As far as, you know, what do I think is going to end up happening? I think they end up sticking with USA and NBC Universal. I mean, we hear these things every few years. There's interest potentially from this person, and this network might want to pick up wrestling, and then they never do. So, I don't know. My gut tells me they end up getting a good deal from USA, maybe a little bit better than the last one, and they end up staying right where they are. But I would love to move to Fox for one reason. 2-hour Raws. Sign me up. I absolutely cannot stand 3-hour Raws every single week. It's been almost 6 years now since we started with this. It was in the summer of 2012 that Raw permanently moved to 3 hours. It's been almost 6 years. And I'm still not used to it. I will never be used to it. The show is too damn long. And anything that scales it back an hour or even 90 minutes, I'm all in favor of. Now, right now, there's no offer anyway, because I think NBC has this exclusive negotiating period with WWE that doesn't end until the spring. And at that point, they can open up conversations with other networks, officially open up conversations with other networks. But it's like the show Shark Tank, right? I'm a big fan of Shark Tank. I watch Shark Tank every week. USA might make them a really good deal, but if they wait too long and they want to hear other offers, who knows if that first deal might be there, right? If they talk to Fox and let's say those talks fall apart and there's no other network that's interested in WWE, no other network that's as big as Fox or even USA, that could do some serious damage to their negotiating leverage with USA. That's what happened last time when they first came back to USA. They were forced to take a shittier deal and they gave up all of their ad money to USA because it was the only deal to be made because nobody else wanted wrestling at the time. I don't know what was going on, what year it was, if this was after the Benoit stuff or what, but there was nobody wanted wrestling. And so they had no choice. They took a deal that they could not have been happy with, because it was the only one they had. And that's where the WWE Network came from. I mean, I'm not saying Vince didn't have this germ of an idea in his head anyway, going back years, that, you know, one day we'll have our own network. But really, that's where the idea came from. Vince, he vowed never again to be put in a position like that where they could end up homeless with no place for their programming. It was a little scary there for a while. And the network, more than anything, is a cushion for them to land on if, let's say, they ever get canceled. They could always put their shows, if need be, on their own network if they have no other place to sign. That's kind of where the whole idea came from. Now, they're in a pretty good position right now. I don't see them being canceled and nobody having any interest in them because, again, they still do good ratings. You could talk about how the Raw ratings have come down over the years if you chart it, and it has. But they just produce so much freaking content, and that's what people want. They want content. So wherever they land, they'll do okay for themselves. But I still think a year from now, 2 years from now, we'll be looking at Raw being on USA. I guess they'll be on USA in a year no matter what, because the deal doesn't end until the end of next year. But I don't know. My gut tells me they're not going anywhere. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday. It was live from Memphis, Tennessee. Very quiet Memphis, Tennessee. More names have been announced for the 25th anniversary of Raw coming up on January 22nd, a week from tomorrow, airing live from both the Barclays Center in Brooklyn and the Manhattan Center. This is the list, not the Jericho list. This is the Raw 25 list as of right now. It stands with these names. Stone Cold Steve Austin has been announced for the show. Ric Flair will be there. The Undertaker, who I'm going to talk about in a second. Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, I guess, as representing DX. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. The Dudley Boys. The New Age Outlaws, the APA. The Bella Twins. The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, will be there. Sergeant Slaughter, The Godfather, The Boogeyman, who I don't even think ever had a real run on Raw, but I guess yeah, he was always a SmackDown guy, but he's coming to the 25th anniversary of Raw. Teddy Long will be there. John Laurinaitis, so we get the return of People Power on this show. Brother Love is going to be there. Eric Bischoff is rumored for the show. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler will be there. I believe they're going to be doing the announcing from the Manhattan Center, which is awesome. A lot of names. Although one name, who I know is very upset apparently that he has not received an invitation, is Vince Russo. I saw somebody sent me a link to a post or a tweet or something where he was pitching a fit. He's like, bro, how do you not invite Vince Russo to the 25th anniversary of Raw, bro? Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara were a big part of Raw's resurgence, bro. Without Vince Russo, Raw would not even be on the air right now, bro. Okay? I made Stone Cold. I made The Rock. I made, bro, The Undertaker. Okay, bro? I'm going to have to find a way. Bro, look, I'm going to have to find a way to sneak into the building, bro, because I need to be there. Now, I'm not bitter about it because, as you know, I'm not a bitter guy. I like to drink some bitters every now and then. I know Henry Godwin used to come from bitters, but I'm not a bitter guy, bro. Even though I'm complaining about this right now, but I'm not a bitter guy, bro. I'm not bitter. You know I'm not bitter. I'm not a bitter guy, bro. All right, enough of that. But apparently he's very upset. He is very upset that he's not received an invitation to be there, even though I have no idea why they would even think to invite him. I mean, they're inviting all these television characters. He was never a character on television. I mean, he was in WCW. Thank God he wasn't in WWE. Yeah, he popped up on TV a handful of times, but not as a character. I mean, I don't... Why would they even think to invite him? You know what I mean? Like, that. Why not just invite anybody who's ever worked behind the scenes on the show? I mean, he definitely was a force behind one of the more prosperous periods in the history of that show. He deserves recognition for that. Absolutely. But as far as him being invited to be part of this whole Raw 25 thing, you know, who gives a shit? Like, he was never on Raw. He was never a character on Raw. Who cares? Why would he be there? This is, by the way, the final Raw before the Royal Rumble. Dave Meltzer claims that the top two matches for WrestleMania are set, barring injury or some other unforeseen circumstance. And neither one really is a surprise. Roman Reigns is expected to challenge Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. The only question being, does Reigns win the Royal Rumble, or does he earn a title shot by winning the Elimination Chamber? And the other match is scheduled to be John Cena against The Undertaker, which they are likely to set up at that 25th anniversary of Raw next week, because both guys are going to be there. You know, hey, 4 years too late, but I guess the power of the paycheck is far too great to turn down. You know, I rewatched last year's Royal Rumble match the other day, because WWE put the whole thing up on their YouTube channel for free, and I saw it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I was curious, let me go back and check it out. I skimmed it, I didn't watch the whole thing straight through, I just wanted to see certain parts of it. And even in the Royal Rumble, I mean, forget the match with Roman at WrestleMania where he just looked like shit. Even in the Rumble, you know, Undertaker just looked old and slow. Because he is. He is old and slow. The man is no normal 52-year-old man. A normal 52-year-old would be, you know, sitting behind a desk somewhere, working 9 to 5 or driving a truck or a bus or something like that. This 52-year-old, soon to be 53, by the way, has been wrestling for over 30 years. 6'10", over 300 pounds, wrestling for 30 years, that's got to take its toll. He was still doing dives out over the top rope as little as 7 years ago. I haven't seen him do one since the Mania match in Atlanta against Triple H. But that really wasn't that long ago. And this guy's jumping over the top rope like a madman. He almost killed himself in that one match with Shawn Michaels. So, it stands to reason that a 52, soon to be 53-year-old man, with bad knees and bad hips, as big as he is going to look old and slow. Now, with that being said, I want to cue up this clip. It's only about 20 seconds, very short. I saw somebody post about this interview in the Facebook group a few days ago. This is a clip from the interview that Undertaker did out of character. So really, he did this interview as Mark Calloway. They even referred to him during the interview as Mark Calloway. Really the closest thing to a shoot interview that the Undertaker has ever done. With Michael Landsberg on his Off the Record show way back in 2002. Back when Undertaker was a spry 37-year-old. Right before WrestleMania 18. This was 16 years ago. Okay, think about that. 16 years is when he did this interview. He was asked about rumors at the time that he would be retiring. And this was his response.
I contemplated retirement on a few. I had a couple of serious injuries a couple years ago. And the one thing that I don't want to be is past my prime. I don't want to be out there in the ring with people saying, you know, you should have seen him. Here, you know, I don't want people out there feeling sorry for me.
It's hard to let go, man. It's hard to let go. I'm glad The Undertaker didn't retire in 2002. I'm glad those rumors turned out to be false, because it would have deprived us of some great matches. Some of the best matches of his career didn't come until after that interview, including the greatest match I've ever seen at a WrestleMania against Shawn Michaels. But I would be lying if I didn't say that I really wish The Undertaker, if the rumors are true, and he is going to wrestle again, because again, nothing's been announced, maybe it's all a giant swerve, maybe Meltzer is wrong, maybe all the rumors are wrong, okay, but, because look, they were wrong in 02, maybe they're wrong now, but if they're correct, and he is coming back at WrestleMania for at least one more match, I would be lying if I didn't say that I really wish 2018 Undertaker would heed the advice of 2002 Undertaker and know when it was time to walk away and not be that guy that people point to and say, man, I wish he would have hung up the boots years ago. Man, I wish he would have called it quits when they did that end of an era match at WrestleMania 28, we had that great parting shot at the very end of Undertaker and Triple H and Shawn Michaels all hugging in the aisle. Man, what a great ending that would have been. Or man, I wish he would have hung it up after the match with Punk at WrestleMania 29. Because it was so great. Paul Bearer had just passed away. He got a win. He saluted the urn. It was an emotional moment. Would have been nice closure for that character. Or, man, I wish he would have ended it when he lost to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. The streak ended. When the streak ended, that should have been it for The Undertaker. You can list example after example. I've heard it from all of you guys, who all have different opinions of when The Undertaker should have just hung it up and called it quits. And I really wish that he would not be that guy that people look at, even now, all these years later, and say, man, I wish he would have just ended it a lot earlier than he did. But here we are. Here we are with a very likely Undertaker match at WrestleMania. And so we look ahead. And I would assume, as a spark for a feud with John Cena, that they use that line that Cena dropped in his promo with Roman Reigns, where he called The Undertaker a battered veteran with a bad hip at the end of his run. At the time, if you remember when I talked about that promo, I wondered if that might be a little seed that they planted for an eventual match between John Cena and The Undertaker. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to reference it, but they should. In fact, I think it was Justin Labar over at Wrestling Inc. who reported on the planned format for Raw 25 next week. 2 hours of that show will come from the Barclays Center. The other hour will emanate from the Manhattan Center, and that hour from the Manhattan Center is not going to air straight through. It's going to be broken up throughout the show. So they'll cut back and forth from Barclays to the Manhattan Center, and I guess the total amount of time that airs from the Manhattan Center will be about an hour. So I guess that's the plan. Now, the other thing he mentioned is that The Undertaker is scheduled to appear, him and Shawn Michaels both, in fact, are scheduled to appear at the Manhattan Center portion of the show. Both guys were on the very first episode of Raw back in 1993 in that very building, in the Manhattan Center, on the 8th floor, in the Grand Ballroom. Again, they're not downstairs in Hammerstein. They're up 8 floors in the Grand Ballroom, and both of them were on that show. In fact, Undertaker, I believe, was in the main event that night against Damian Demento. So it would make sense for him, you know, for nostalgia purposes, to return to the very place that he appeared when this show first started way back in 93. And what I think would be cool, so the other thing that I think Labar mentioned is the fact that John Cena is scheduled to be appearing not at the Manhattan Center, but at the Barclays Center. So they would be in two separate locations. What I think would be cool, just looking ahead to how they could, if they're going to do this, how they could work it, is if they have The Undertaker show up first, whether it's at the beginning of the show, the first hour, the top of the second hour, whenever. They have The Undertaker show up first at the Manhattan Center, but as himself. Call him the American Badass if you want to, Big Evil. I mean, they both had distinctive looks, right? The Badass, he came out on the motorcycle with the long hair. Big Evil had the short cropped hair, but they kind of looked alike. I mean, they were almost one and the same. But have him come out as himself, right? As Big Evil. Leave the dead man buried in Orlando where he was put down last year. Have him come out and have him call out John Cena for what he said about him all those months ago. Maybe call him out for, you know, forgetting where he came from and disrespecting him like that. Sort of call a little callback to when John Cena first debuted on SmackDown in 2002. Which, by the way, Undertaker wasn't the dead man when he confronted John Cena on that episode of SmackDown. He was Big Evil. He was talking about his yard. He was putting his hand out to shake the kid's hand. And then, so, you know, Undertaker's out here talking about Cena, and then have him drop a line about how, you know, if you're too scared to come here, then maybe I'll come to Brooklyn and I'll tell you to your face. And imagine the reaction to that line. And then you save the segment with Cena for the end of the show to give Undertaker enough time to get to the Barclays Center, and he confronts John Cena at the end of the show and he lays him out with a tombstone. That I like. I was thinking, how could they work the two locations into it? I think that's a pretty cool way of doing it, if they wanted to. And it does basically give away, if you sort of either, you know, outright announce it, but even tease that there could be a WrestleMania match between Undertaker and Cena, it does basically give away that Cena would not be winning the Royal Rumble match, which he's already entered himself into. Unless, you know, Undertaker maybe will also announce that he's entering the Royal Rumble. He entered the Rumble last year. Who's to say that The Undertaker won't be there in part to announce his entrance into the Royal Rumble this year? It's it's pretty sad to watch Undertaker moving around in the ring after what we saw last year. But that doesn't mean you can't still make him look like a badass. And I think him on the microphone, you know, his voice, his words, is the easiest way to do that. Because if he's past his peak physically and he just can't hack it anymore, and it's sad to watch, but they want to use Undertaker and they just insist on using him, or he wants to come back, he can speak. Let the man speak. That's what I mean. Like, the dead man character is very limiting as far as him coming out. And, you know, he kind of let loose a little bit when he appeared on SmackDown that one time and made us all think he was back, and then he never showed up again. He was like, oh, I'm here to, you know, dig souls and or dig holes and take souls and all that kind of stuff. But he was still the dead man. You know what I mean? He's very limited in what he can say and how he can act. We're at the point now where he's got to shed that skin. And if you're going to do something with him, his best tool, his best weapon, is to come out and just be a badass. I think that's the way to go with it. And this would be, you know, a way to do that, to threaten to leave and drive to the other building that same night to kick this guy's ass, would be a pretty cool way, I think, to work the two locations in there and have him appear also in front of the crowds in both places. Because I'm sure both crowds would want to see The Undertaker live. It's about 6 miles between the two buildings. About a 30-minute drive. So it's very doable if Undertaker comes out, like I said, in hour one, top of hour two, and then comes out for the very last segment of the show, he can get from point A to point B. I mean, hell, he's The Undertaker. If the lights go out, he could just teleport from one fucking building to the other. So I really wish that he wouldn't wrestle again, but if they're going to do this, I think that's one way to do it. But I'm convinced at this point that this guy's going to be working WrestleMania until his body just completely falls apart. Like, WrestleMania 37, I'm going to be sitting here talking about Undertaker challenging Aleister Black. Right? Or WrestleMania 40, it's going to be The Undertaker against the Velveteen Dream. Roman Reigns is defending his Intercontinental Championship against The Miz on that Raw 25 show. They've already announced that match for Raw 25. Miz made his return to Raw this past week. He attacked Roman Reigns after the main event, gave him a skull-crushing finale, and then him and his boys gave Roman the Shield triple powerbomb. You know, I think if the goal was to have Roman Reigns keep the title warm until Miz was ready to come back, sort of just give Roman some gold, give him something to do, and when Miz finished his movie, we'll just put the belt back on Miz, then, you know, we'll see the title change. If the plan is to keep the title on Roman to do champion against champion at WrestleMania, then we won't. I think it's just that simple. It's one of two things. I hope they do the title change. It's a big show that night. I think there's a very good chance we could see a title change on that show. I don't know what else Miz does without it. It's a combination of, I don't know what else there is for Miz to do without that title, and Roman does not need the Intercontinental title if he's challenging for the Universal. He doesn't need it. So put the championship back on Miz. Have somebody screw Roman out of the title. It's not like Miz is going to beat him clean straight up. And, you know, you can at least set something up for Miz going into WrestleMania. Maybe Finn Balor can challenge him. I think you should have put the title on Balor to begin with, but you can have Balor challenge Miz and put the Intercontinental Championship on Balor and have him carry it for a while. And that would be something for him to do as well. So I'd much rather see them go that direction than just keep the belt on Roman. Speaking of The Miz, we are a couple days away now. He is teaming with Asuka in the Mixed Match Challenge, which kicks off this Tuesday after SmackDown on Facebook. I am going to check out the first episode. I will probably be reviewing it here on the show. I think these things are only like 20 minutes a week. It's one match per week. I think that's doable. If Miz and Asuka don't win, I saw some discussion about this week. It would be Asuka's first, technically her first loss on WWE television. Television, does that count as television? It's Facebook. As far as her streak goes, some people are freaking out about this, and there's a debate, does it count? Does her streak end if she loses in the Mixed Match Challenge? I don't think it does count. I don't think it should. Not unless she's the one to take the losing fall. I think if you have the visual of Asuka herself being the one to be pinned, that sort of changes the dynamic a little bit, as opposed to, let's say, Miz being the one to be beaten. But, I mean, I look at this whole streak of her now. I mean, how long has it been? She's been undefeated. I don't know how many days. It's been a long time. Asuka has not been pinned or made to submit on TV, and that's the key. I look at the streak as pinfall or submission. I don't look at it as, oh, she got counted out, the streak is over. Oh, she got disqualified, the streak is over. To me, that's bullshit. That doesn't count. And I don't see that happening here. The streak is her not being pinned or submitted. That's it. The streak lives on. But besides Miz and Asuka, there are other teams announced here. These are the teams that have so far been announced for the Mixed Match Challenge. I think actually all the teams have already been announced. And by the way, as they've been announcing these teams, the way that they've been doing it, showing their reaction backstage when they find out who their partner is, I like that a lot. Supposedly their reactions are genuine. They're not told in advance who their partner is going to be. It looks, when you watch it, it looks genuine. And everybody's all excited. They all geek out about who their partner is. I think that's cool. I mean, any way to get more of a genuine reaction or inject like more genuine looking things into the show, I'm all for, because this is not a show that really comes off typically as genuine in any way. So I'm all for, you know, showing people's real reactions and all that kind of stuff. But these are the teams. We have Shinsuke Nakamura and Natalya. Speaking of which, Natty looked like she'd have to have her smile surgically removed from her face when she saw that Nakamura was going to be her partner. Bayley and Elias, who is subbing for the injured Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe won a poll to be Bayley's partner. And I'm kind of bummed we won't see that, because I can just picture the facial expressions on Joe's face having to be out there with Bayley. But Joe is hurt, and that sucks, and I'm going to talk about that when we get deeper into the review here, because that's potentially a big story. So it'll be Bayley and Elias, Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss, Beauty and the Beast, I guess, they're a team, Bobby Roode and Charlotte Flair, Sasha Banks and Finn Balor, Demon Boss, they're a team, Sami Zayn and Becky Lynch, Big E and Carmella, Goldust and Alicia Fox, Rusev and Lana, Jimmy Uso and Naomi, and Apollo Crews and Nia Jax. Those are your teams in the Mixed Match Challenge. They already have a bracket out for week 1 to week 6, outlining what the matches are going to be. It's going to be Balor and Banks against Nakamura and Natalya, so we may get Balor against Nakamura here. I guess we will, right? It's not going to be, it's not an intergender match, so we are going to get Balor against Nakamura. The Miz and Asuka against Big E and Carmella, Strowman and Alexa Bliss against Sami Zayn and Becky Lynch, Goldust and Alicia against Uso and Naomi, Elias and Bayley against Rusev and Lana, and Apollo and Nia against Rude and Flair. So those are your matches over the next 6 weeks. If I had to make a pick, I'm going with Miz and Asuka. Mizka. They're my pick to win it all. As you heard in the intro this week, Finn Balor was out there during the opening segment on Raw Monday night with Anderson and Gallows, ragging on Jason Jordan. Balor looks genuinely happy. Like, he's got this smile on his face from ear to ear when he comes out now. He just looks so happy. Like, he's been stuck in prison, and the last few weeks he's been paroled. I still can't believe they gave him that line, though. Like, what's that thing we call him? It starts with an N. Jesus. I will say this, though. I like what they have Jordan doing now, acting like he's some kind of honorary Shield member, acting like a big shot. Kind of like, you know, what Crash Holly used to think he was, a super heavyweight. And Bob Holly, too. They thought they were super heavyweights. They would come out, they would announce them as being 400 pounds. It was completely ridiculous, but you couldn't help but laugh and just be entertained by the whole thing. So Balor and his boys, they just laughed at Jordan. Even Rollins and Reigns, they just kind of roll their eyes every time Jordan opens his mouth. So I like that. Matt Hardy had his first match as Woken Matt, new music and all. The Hardy Boys graphics were still there. Hopefully they'll have that fixed this week. That was weird. I think his new music is pretty cool. I will say that my man Steve Mello, big fan of the show, he needs to post a link in the Facebook group to the music that he put together. It's on YouTube. So Steve, if you're listening, you know, post a link to that, because this thing is, that version that he made, that he put together, excuse me, is badass. I wish they would have used that as his theme. But, you know, the one that WWE used, I thought was good too. He beat Curt Hawkins, which, I mean, not that impressive. Everybody beats Curt Hawkins. Even Curt Hawkins beats Curt Hawkins. I know some people call that a sin. After the match, Bray Wyatt appeared in the ring. The two of them laughed at each other for about 60 seconds straight, which was about 50 seconds too long. What is with WWE lingering on? They've done this for years. Like, backstage shots when somebody walks off, and they'll keep the camera on the announcer. And these poor women back there, it's like Renee has to stand there with this stupid look on her face. And they just linger for a good 5 to 10 seconds longer than they should. I swear they do it. It's got to be a rib. It has to be a rib on these people. There's just no other explanation for it. It is so awkward how they linger. And that's what this segment was. This segment lingered for almost a minute longer than it had to. It just went on and on. And this was not a Memphis crowd that was reacting to much anyway. They were half asleep. So that made it worse. Because by the time this thing was over, it was like people... It was just weird. They were just sitting there. They didn't know how to react anymore. It's just two friggin' psychopaths laughing at each other in the ring. And it just went on for too long. I really hope that they're filming segments as we speak from the Hardy compound in Cameron, because these laugh-offs with Bray, they're getting very old, very fast. We need Rebby, we need Vanguard 1, we need new characters. If they want to introduce new characters to the Broken Universe, that's cool. I saw Matt posted a video on his YouTube channel this week teasing the return of Vanguard 1. And I like the way it was shot. The Hardys shoot it themselves on these the drones. There you go. My mind is mush at this point. But, you know, he probably bought a whole bunch of drones, and he shoots this stuff himself, and it looks great. It looks fine. I wish they would air these segments. Let him produce them all on his own, and let them just air those segments on TV. But that's what I'm waiting for. That's the kind of stuff that I'm waiting for. Segments from Cameron that they just sort of push the play button, and they air them on Raw. Cedric Alexander and Enzo Amore had a match here for the Cruiserweight title. Alexander won by countout, which means that Enzo kept his title. But you would never know that based on Cedric's reaction. Enzo got kicked in the face. He got busted open badly. So he goes out to the floor. Cedric then does a tope to the floor. He lands on Enzo. And Enzo sells it like Cedric landed right on top of his ankle, which it kind of looked like he did, but he sold it like his ankle may have been broken. Like, at first I thought it was maybe a legitimate injury, but then it became obvious that it wasn't, because they did this deal where the ref's counting, and Enzo's trying to get back in. It's like an 8 count, and he can very easily roll back into the ring, but he sort of has this eureka moment where he realizes, oh, wait a minute, the referee's count is up to 8. So he just falls back down and gets himself counted out. To keep his championship, because that's what a heel does. What was so stupid about this was Cedric Alexander had this dopey smile on his face. He pulled a Lex Luger from SummerSlam 93. The only thing missing were the balloons and all the guys coming out from the back to put him up on their shoulders. You didn't win the title, you moron. What the hell are you so happy about? We also had Kane attack Brock Lesnar from behind after Paul Heyman did a promo in the ring hyping up the three-way match at the Rumble, which, I'm not excited for that at all, I gotta tell you. I'm excited for the Rumble because it's the Rumble, and I just hope and pray they don't fuck it up. But as far as this three-way match, I have no interest in this whatsoever. My only hope is that Brock usually shines in these multi-man matches. I mean, his singles matches can be hit or miss, depending on who he's in the ring with and how motivated he is and all that, but... You know, when we've seen him in these multi-man matches like SummerSlam last year, like the Rumble 3 years ago with Rollins and Cena, he's had some really great matches. Only this is not Rollins and Cena. This is Strowman and Kane, so I'm a little worried about that. But Kane attacked Brock. They brawl to the back, which I like that. I'm like, all right, this is cool. Here we go. I like these backstage brawls. We don't get enough of them. I like it even better when they brawl outside the building. That's why I love the hardcore title stuff so much. Back in 99 when they would... You know, Al Snow and Bob Holly would brawl into the Mississippi River. Al Snow and the Big Boss Man at SummerSlam literally brawled out of the building, into traffic, crossed the street, wrestled into a bar. Like, I miss that stuff. Crash Holly coming down the fun slide of Funtime USA, which isn't there anymore, unfortunately. Trying to evade the headbangers in the ball pit, trying to evade them, I guess, spitting on him. So, I miss that kind of stuff. So, I see these guys brawling in the back. I'm like, here we go. Shit's about to go down. So then Braun Strowman shows up. He beats the shit out of both of them. Braun throws Lesnar at one point, just hurls him. And when Brock lands on top of this table, this giant, it was like a giant crate of so, like maybe like an equipment crate of some kind. It fell right on top of Lesnar's head and it looked heavy. I'm like, ouch. Strowman laid out Kane too. Then he spots a grappling hook. He glances up. So he's looking at the hook. Then he glances up behind him at this giant, what do they call those? The trusses. This like giant lighting truss. This giant metal structure. Okay. And then he would look back down at the hook. He would look back up at the truss. And so you see what's going through his head here. Obviously, this guy has evil intentions. I mean, he's got that hook in his hand. He looked like fucking Batman with that thing. If Batman had a giant beard and ate 10,000 calories a day, he would be Braun Strowman. So Strowman takes the hook. He hurls it up into the air over the structure. And he proceeds to pull the entire thing down on top of Kane and Brock Lesnar. Now, they edited this thing to shit. They, you know, all the jump cuts and everything. I'm sure they shot this earlier in the day. But it looked cool. And again, he yanks the whole structure. It comes crashing down. Heyman, I thought, was fantastic here. He sold this like he just witnessed a murder, which basically he did. This was attempted murder, which I feel like there's been an epidemic of this. I feel like there's been a lot more of that on WWE television, more than usual in the last year. And that doesn't even include the booking of Bray Wyatt. But it all goes back to when Strowman flipped over an ambulance with Roman Reigns inside, right? That was attempted murder. Then we had Roman driving an ambulance with Braun Strowman inside, drove it into a truck, or I think he backed it up into a truck. That was attempted murder. Then we had all the heels putting Braun in the garbage truck at TLC and compacting him. That was attempted murder. And now this. And all four of those incidents just so happened to involve Braun Strowman. This man is a magnet for felonies. But the absolute best part of this entire thing was after he pulls down this giant rig, they have like six guys, I'm not even exaggerating, five or six, I guess EMTs they were, crowding around Brock Lesnar, trying to load him onto a stretcher and wheel him into an ambulance. And poor Kane is just laying there dead. He's just absolutely no one gave a shit about Kane. Like, art imitates life here in this segment. Half a dozen guys are rushing to help Brock Lesnar, and Kane is left all by himself, just dying on the ground and struggling to get to his feet. I laughed my ass off when I saw that. This whole crowd of people around Brock, and they would cut back to Kane, and Kane is laying there in agony, like, inching, trying to pick himself up. I was like, oh my god, does nobody care about this man anymore? I kind of felt bad for the guy. So I was entertained. I actually thought this whole segment was great. I hope they do that at the Rumble, where they take Kane out, like, right at the very beginning, and just leave him out of the equation. He can come back at the very end. Unfortunately, this next segment killed my good mood when I heard about this. Samoa Joe, who beat Rhino in a completely irrelevant match on this show that did not have to happen. Only went about 2.5 minutes. In that 2.5 minutes, he suffered an injury. He did cut a promo when the match was over. He entered himself into the Royal Rumble match. He called out John Cena. Didn't look like anything was wrong. But WWE.com had an update after the show from Dr. Amon. Saying that during the match, Joe felt a pop at the bottom of his right foot and suffered what they believe to be a plantar fascia rupture, which is a thick tissue rupture under the foot. They were sending him for an MRI to confirm what they thought it was. They said treatment for something like this normally includes wearing a boot with crutches, getting a platelet-rich plasma injections. They did not mention a recovery time, from what I read, it could be anywhere from 2 weeks and not that serious to 12 weeks and very serious, depending on the severity of it, which puts the Royal Rumble, unfortunately, in jeopardy. Should be fine for WrestleMania, but he entered himself into a Rumble match that he may not now be able to compete in. And it could nix whatever they had planned with him and Cena, which, if it is Cena Undertaker or WrestleMania, I guess it wasn't going to be Cena Joe, even though I would much rather see them build up to a John Cena Samoa Joe match at WrestleMania than I would Cena Undertaker at this point. I was really looking forward to Cena Undertaker years ago, and they never did it, and now I just have no interest in seeing it. So I'd much rather see Cena Joe. That's a huge match that we haven't seen on television yet. They've had a bunch of house show matches, I think all of which Cena has won, of course, but they've never gone one-on-one on TV. And Cena and Joe have a history. They broke into the business together out in UPW. In fact, Joe can take some credit in John Cena getting a deal with WWE. They worked a match together while they were in UPW. Jim Ross was there scouting Cena. He was there specifically to scout John Cena, maybe some other guys, but he was there really to scout John Cena. Cena looked so good in the match with Joe that he got a contract out of it. And funny enough, when Joe went up to JR that day to ask him, hey, would WWE be interested in me? Jim Ross flat out told him, no, we wouldn't be. So, they could build an entire match just on that alone. How Cena got the contract that Joe should have gotten. You know, it's a match 18 years in the making. Looks like we may have to wait a little longer for it now. It is kind of sad, though. You know, Joe, this is not his first injury. And you hate to brand anybody as injury prone. It feels like he's one or two more injuries away from that. And obviously, you know, he's older and he's had some injuries in his career. And it is really sad that Cena got the contract and that they said, we're not interested in you. And Joe went on to Japan and Ring of Honor and TNA, and he had tons of great matches, and he built up this great reputation for himself. But all those years that he could have been wrestling guys like Cena and like Randy Orton and The Undertaker, and could have been an even bigger name and probably made more money and all that stuff, the prime years of his career were lost in a lot of ways. And I don't really consider his time in Ring of Honor or his first several years in TNA to be a waste. I consider the latter part of his career in TNA to be a colossal waste. However many years that was, going back to when they kidnapped him and they put the tattoo on his face and he was running around with a sword and then some of the other shit they had him doing, what a waste. What a waste of a career, those last few years of his in TNA. And it's a shame that he got to WWE a few years too late. And now you see him getting hurt, you hope this is not the start of a pattern, because he's one of the best things on Raw going right now, him and Strowman. And if Joe is gone for any extended period of time, if he has to miss the Rumble, that sucks, because he's one of the best things about that show right now. And I hope he's not out for a very long time. The main event was the Balor Club beating Rollins, Reigns, and Jordan after Balor pinned Rollins with the coup de grace. Reigns and Jordan were arguing because Jordan had, he did something and inadvertently it distracted the referee, and the referee didn't see a legal tag that was made between Rollins and Reigns. And so Reigns blamed him for that. And they were arguing after the match when the Miztourage came out, laid out Roman, which I talked about. I have to mention this again. After what happened a few weeks ago with all the awful camera cuts during that pull apart with Lesnar and Kane, the constant camera cuts were awful during parts of this match. There was a part of the match where Reigns was in the ring with Balor. Oh my, it was unwatchable. It was unwatchable. They have to dial it back with the camera cuts, for God's sake. Enough already. Enough. Literally every punch, they cut to a different camera and then they would quickly cut back. Somebody in that truck is having way too much fun. Either that, or they have some kind of a disease where they can't control their fingers and they're hitting buttons every 2 seconds and they have to cut that shit out. Ugh, SmackDown, Birmingham, Alabama, Tuesday night. Twitter poll, 1,600. I think I forgot to mention the Raw poll, but the Twitter poll for SmackDown, 1,600 of you voted. 51% thumbs up, 49% thumbs down. The slimmest of possible thumbs up margins you could ask for is what you gave this show. I don't have a lot to say about this show because there wasn't that much that actually happened. The rules for the handicap match at the Royal Rumble appear to be that there will be tags in and out. And if Owens and Zayn should win, they become co-champion. Co-WWE champions. The way that Chris Jericho and Chyna were co-intercontinental champions back in 2000. I didn't like the idea then. I like it even less now. Mojo Rawley pinned Zack Ryder on this show to advance to the semifinals of the United States title tournament. He'll face Bobby Roode. Roode was in the ring afterwards. Mojo backed away. And then Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers popped up on the Titantron talking about how I was WWE champion for 185 days. He was actually champion for 170 days. Must be using some of that Maharaja math. Talked about beating Xavier Woods in the next round. If Jinder Mahal can't beat Xavier Woods, then what does that say about the WWE title that this guy held that thing for 170 days, plus 15 make-believe days? Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin complained to Daniel Bryan that they had the tag team title stolen from them the week before. Bryan ended up announcing a 2 out of 3 falls match with them against the Usos for the championship at the Royal Rumble. Breezango got an upset win over Rusev and Aiden English. They even pinned Rusev here, not English, because of course they did. And AJ Styles, Randy Orton, and Shinsuke Nakamura in the main event beat Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a 3-on-2 handicap match after Randy Orton pinned Sami Zayn with an RKO. Owens and Zayn, they tried to get themselves counted out. They tried to get themselves disqualified. Both times, Shane McMahon decided to make the match no count out, and then he made it no DQ. He was not giving these guys a way out. There is a feeling of sameness right now on this show every single week that just makes it very tough to get excited about anything they're doing right now on SmackDown. As you can tell here from what little I have to say about the show this week. And I don't know if that means we need another shakeup. I don't know what that means. I'm hoping post-Rumble things will become a little more clear as far as which direction they're going in for WrestleMania. But I just can't really get excited about a whole lot that's going on SmackDown right now. And hopefully that will change very soon, because we are heading into what should be the most exciting time of year. And if you can't put together an exciting show during WrestleMania season, then there ain't no hope for the rest of the year.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
This was the first show taped from Center Stage in Atlanta, the old stomping ground for WCW Saturday Night. Shayna Baszler made her in-ring debut against Dakota Kai. This didn't last very long. Shayna had Dakota's wrist placed on the mat with her elbow bent upwards, and she stomped on it, supposedly breaking the arm. It looked really good, as in, like, she really did break her arm. Dakota screamed in agony. The referee called off the match. And as officials were tending to her, Baszler locked her in the rear naked choke and put her out until Ember Moon ran out to make the save and Shayna left. Would they really put the title on Baszler this soon? That's the question. We're assuming, of course, that she gets the title match against Ember at the next TakeOver show. That seems awfully quick to do a title change, but if we get more of this, I think she could definitely be the ass-kicking women's champion who just murders people, and you build to the eventual rematch with her and Kairi Sane. With Sane having been the one to beat her in the finals of the Mae Young Classic. And I probably would have, I would have Shayna Baszler beat Kairi Sane. I'm not even saying I'd have Sane beat her and win the championship. But I think that would be a natural match to build to, because you got to know that, you know, somebody like Baszler just eats at her knowing that this woman beat her and won the trophy. So I think that's something that they could build to, her looking for her revenge. As first matches go, you couldn't do any better than this in trying to get her over as a killer. I thought this was fantastic what they did here with her. Cassius Ohno pinned Raul Mendoza after hitting what they called his high-tension elbow strike to the back of the head. Backstage, the Velveteen Dream, who I don't believe has been on TV since his loss to Aleister Black at TakeOver way back in November, he interrupted Johnny Gargano, who was cutting a promo backstage, and he wanted Johnny to say thank you, because if he hadn't gotten hurt, Johnny never would have gotten his spot in that number one contenders tournament. And he told Johnny, you don't deserve that spot. So potentially building to something with the Velveteen Dream and Johnny Gargano. Even though I still think the ultimate direction here is going to be Gargano and Ciampa. But that really does just boil down to how far along in his recovery is Ciampa. I can't see that match at TakeOver with Gargano and Almas going any way other than Ciampa costing Gargano the championship. I can't see Johnny winning it. I would not have him win it. You could have him win it and do a championship match against Ciampa and have them headline TakeOver in April, but I wouldn't do that. I think Almas deserves a little bit of a run. I mean, he's had virtually no run, really, so far with the belt. You got to take it right off him? That doesn't make any sense. I think him and Zelina Vega make a fun pairing. I enjoy watching Almas more now than I did a year ago. I'd like to see him at least go to WrestleMania weekend with it and maybe drop it there to Aleister Black or something. So my mind hasn't changed as far as how that match ends at that TakeOver show. Because look, even if Ciampa can't wrestle yet, but if he's, you know, far enough along that he can do something, there's no reason for him not to get involved and cost Johnny the championship and then just slowly build to the eventual match between the two of them. Guess who's out of detention? Lio Rush was back, making his first NXT TV appearance in months since his ill-fated tweet about Emma. So that's good news for him. The good news that being that he's back on TV. The bad news is he had to face Lars Sullivan. He did his best to tire out Sullivan running away from him, but Lars decapitated him with a lariat, hit the freak accident, and pinned him. Can I just say, I love what they did here with Sullivan's entrance, where they turned the lights down and they showed him standing in the ring, but all you see, it's like dark enough that all you see is this silhouette with like this white light sort of outlining his body. But you see like all the little hairs on his body, but you can't actually see him. You can't see his face. He looked like a Sasquatch. I just thought that was really cool. Post-match, Sullivan got the microphone, says that now that I've basically run through all these scrubs, I want Killian Dane. And then he picked up poor Lio and he gave him a freak accident from a standing position on the middle rope. On WWE's YouTube channel, they interviewed Lio Rush backstage. He was all dejected and he was teasing that maybe I need to reevaluate my career. And then WWE.com did a story about this cryptic tweet that Lio posted saying, "We are NXT? Question mark. I think maybe it's time I find my own heaven." Well, actually, the full tweet was, "Maybe the grass is greener on the other side. One man's heaven is another man's hell. And maybe I need to find my own heaven." That was the full tweet. But they did a whole story on this on .com. So clearly they're turning this into a storyline, which is a good sign, I think, for Lio. The fact that he's even back on TV is a good sign. But now they're going to turn this into a storyline and we'll see where it goes. Because this could have gone really badly for him. There were a lot of people very, very upset with him after what he did. And rightfully so. I didn't think it was a fireable offense. I didn't call for his head the way that some people did. But, you know, there was going to be a price to pay. He's been paying it. He probably will continue to pay it even if he is back on TV. And he should. Because it was a stupid thing that he did. But I'm happy that he's back and they'll work him back into the storylines in some way. Main event was scheduled to be Sanity challenging the Undisputed Era for the NXT Tag Team titles. But they laid out Sanity backstage before the match. Nikki Cross did try to come out when the Undisputed Era came out and they were gloating and they have no opponents. Nikki Cross came out and officials had to hold her back from getting into the ring. They had to pull her away. William Regal came out. He said that there is going to be a tag team title match tonight. Their opponents turned out to be Roderick Strong and Aleister Black, who lost after Adam Cole attacked Black. Black chased him into the crowd, leaving his partner. He basically left his partner to die here. It's like Hogan taking Elizabeth backstage in the middle of a tag team match. He left Savage to die. It's no wonder Savage smacked him in the face and walked out on him. You tell me that Hogan was supposed to be the babyface in that feud? So Kyle Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, they finished off Roddy. They hit total elimination to retain their titles. Now, Black did run back down. They all laid him out. Cole gave him an attitude adjustment, basically, on top of an open folding chair, which looked like it sucked. They went to leave. Regal came back out. He was not happy at all, and he informed Cole that you're going to be facing Aleister Black at TakeOver in an Extreme Rules match, which I think is the first time they've used that stipulation for an NXT show. So there you go. I like the different atmosphere when they go to different buildings. I mean, the center stage, it doesn't look anything like it did when, you know, WCW was running there. It had a very distinct look, like a studio look. This looked different than Full Sail, but this looked nothing like the old WCW show used to look. I kind of wish it did, but I guess they'll be there for several more weeks before they get back to Full Sail, which is good because, again, that Full Sail crowd was starting to get on my nerves. It'd be good. I think it'd be a very good thing for them to get out of there for a little bit. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? So, good. Get away from Full Sail for a little bit, and then they can go back. I wanted to mention one more thing here, and this does kind of tie into NXT, because if you remember, the Bayley superfan, Izzy, who became kind of a Z-level celebrity, I guess, by always being on TV, always being ringside or whatever. Bayley would be losing and getting her ass kicked. There would be Izzy crying her eyes out at ringside. Sasha Banks will always be... She will always have my great respect for that one match. I think it was the Iron Woman match they did where she was, it was mocking Izzy and basically made this girl cry. It was fantastic. So anyway, Izzy is still around and she does still go to the shows. But Izzy is now part of the show. She is now managing, or at least for one night. I don't know if it's a consistent thing, but for one night anyway, she was a manager for MFW Wrestling. And she managed their champion, Psycho Stan. And I want to play some audio here for you because Izzy, who, how old is she now? 12? Izzy cut a heel promo, I'm not even exaggerating, like better than most of the women that you would see in WWE. So let me play this for you right now. This is a heel promo from Izzy the Superfan from this independent show just in the last couple of weeks.
Your winner, Psycho Stan. And how dare you throw me out of the ring?
You keep going, you'll get thrown out of the building.
Do you know who I am? I'm Izzy, and I'm the most famous person in this dump. And I'm the best manager of MFW. Do you know me?
You might be, but you're about to leave the building.
Shut up.
Wow. I didn't know Izzy had it in her. This girl is totally becoming a wrestler, by the way, which means, you know what that means? That means that we are that much closer to the idea that I pitched all those years ago. How many years ago did I pitch that idea? We are that much closer to that idea becoming a reality where one day Izzy attacks Bayley and just beats the hell out of her on TV. It's going to be great. I can't wait. Impact. Let's talk about Impact very quickly here. This is the beginning of a new era. I forgot how many eras there have been so far. We have the Fox Sports era, right? That counts, which I guess would be the Jeff Jarrett era. We had the Dixie Carter era, although we may have had little sub-eras in there, like the 3-hour era when they moved to Monday nights and got slaughtered. That counts sort of as its own era. The era of Hogan and Bischoff when they came in, which was obviously hit or miss. And we had the, I'm trying to think here, we had the GFW era, right? I guess this would be the Anthem era. Well, now it's the Scott D'Amore and Don Callis era. Scott D'Amore and Don Callis are running the show there now in Impact Wrestling, and it is the beginning of a new era, and it is off to a very... That's the word I'm looking for here. I don't know. It's off to a very weird start. Let's put it that way. First of all, the six-sided ring is no more, which just as a matter of personal taste, I support that idea. I think a traditional four-sided wrestling ring is the way it should be. All due respect to AAA. So the six-sided ring is gone, which is what the first thing Hogan and Bischoff did when they came in was they got rid of that six-sided ring. I think they called it, Hogan called it a playpen. He got booed. Remember that? The fans turned on him. Because the fans liked it. It was sort of a staple. It was part of TNA's identity. And the first thing they did was they took that away. And I remember Hogan cutting a promo in the ring. Oh, it's a playpen. We're not, you know, these are not little children. We're going to be like adults. And everybody just booed the shit out of them. Also gone, and this is a much bigger story, is Ethan Carter III. EC3 is gone. He was the unlucky recipient at the tapings this past week of the Feast or Fired briefcase that led to him being fired. In reality, they're letting him out of his deal early because I guess his deal wasn't going to expire for a few more months. And so this is going to start speculation now about EC3 as a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble match. I would do it. I have no idea if he'll be free and clear to even be in the Rumble by the end of this month. He might not be, but I would totally do it if he is free and able to do it. Because look, even if, let's say he comes to WWE, if they do send him to NXT, he could still be in the Rumble. There's no reason not to put him in there as a surprise. I wouldn't even send him to NXT. I would send him right to the main roster because they could use a guy like him. They could use a good heel like an EC3 right now. I look at Bobby Roode and I say to myself, I know at some point Bobby is going to go heel. Everybody turns. Everybody turns back and forth, right? Unless your name is Ricky Steamboat, everybody turns. So it will happen at some point, but I still say it was a massive miscalculation to bring in Bobby Roode as a babyface, this gleaming babyface when he first came in. And, his work on SmackDown has not been as exciting or as fun as his work and his promos were in NXT, I missed the Bobby Roode when he was feuding with Roderick Strong, who came out fake tears, crocodile tears, and just completely healing it up on Roddy. I mean, that's the Bobby Roode that I miss. And we haven't gotten any of that so far on the main roster. And I mentioned that because EC3 could sort of fill that role. He could be that kind of heel. I don't know that anybody looks at EC3 and says, man, EC3 has these great matches. He's known, I think, for being a smarmy, easy to hate, arrogant heel. That was until he turned babyface. That was the whole nature of the character. I'm a Carter. I'm Dixie Carter's nephew, and I got a silver spoon in my mouth, and I'm a real piece of garbage. And he really just embraced that role, and really WWE did nothing with this guy. He came in, and he was one of the few names that I could think of off the top of my head, true stars that they created. They gave Bubba Ray Dudley a chance to shine as Bully Ray, but he was already an established star when he came in, but they at least gave him the chance. And he also, he took that Bully Ray character and he knocked it out of the park. And when he came back to WWE, I was very disappointed that they didn't let him play that Bully Ray character. And I think he's done interviews where he said that he was going to, and then at the very last second, Vince McMahon changed his mind. So we never did get to see Bully Ray in WWE. But he got an opportunity that WWE didn't give him. And I will give that to TNA. They gave him an opportunity. I think he nailed it, and they made a star. They really did. They created a star out of this guy, whereas before he really didn't have any kind of name at all. And so now he can come into WWE. He's older, he's more experienced, and I think he could play that character very well and be a very capable, entertaining part of that show. And the main roster, like I said, could definitely use a heel like him right now. Both shows. Either show. Well, when I did my predictions a few weeks ago, I said EC3 will leave TNA, which he has. And my prediction was that he would go to Raw. But frankly, he can go to Raw, he can go to SmackDown, and I think you can plug him into either show and he would do very well. Part of me wonders, I know Spud, Rockstar Spud, is set to debut any week now. He's going to be in the Cruiserweight division, and the Cruiserweights have matches on Raw. And I enjoyed the interplay with him in EC3 in TNA. I want him on Raw for no other reason, because I'd love for there to be the opportunity to do something with him, maybe in Spud at some point, maybe kind of link them back up. And there's no reason you can't. It's like when Big Cass comes back, if Enzo is still in the Cruiserweight division, you could still link the two of them back up together as buddies. So you could do the same thing with EC3 and Spud. I find it funny. Both are on their way either out of TNA or they've already left TNA. One's already signed with WWE, and now all the attention turns to EC3. What will he do? I don't see him going to Japan. I mean, I guess he could. He could just join the Bullet Club like everybody else does, but I see him as a guy who could go to WWE, and that probably would be the best place for him, and he could have some success there. Josh Matthews, in the last little bit of Impact news here. Actually, there's two more pieces of news. And one of them is the one that sort of just makes you scratch your head. You hear about this new era, the Callis and Demore era. And I read this news last night that Josh Matthews is the new Impact Grand Champion after Matt Sydal gifted him the championship in this angle they did where Sydal had already won the X Division title. So now he had two belts. And he decided to gift one of them to Josh Matthews. He gave it up and he gave the championship to Josh. Who could possibly care about any of this? Is it any wonder why EC3 left? I mean, he may have left because they just didn't want to pay him what he wanted. It could have been a money issue, but it ain't no surprise to me that guys like EC3 and maybe Lashley and all these people are out the door. Because this is just, what can you say? What can you say? Every time you hear about a new regime, you hear about shit like this, and you just shake your head. Now, it is only the first step of what I assume is a longer story. Maybe maybe, just maybe, they did this as a way to ultimately retire this useless title. And so what better way to kill it dead than to put it on Josh Matthews? Maybe that's the idea here. They're trying to weed out some of the titles and some of the old ideas from the old regime. I'd like to think that, you know, Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, they've got a pretty good reputation in wrestling. I don't think they're a couple of dummies. I'd like to think they know what they're doing here and this is going to lead to something like that. But for now, as we speak, Josh Matthews is the grand champion in Impact Wrestling. Austin Aries, in the other little bit of news here, is the new TNA World Champion, if that's what they're even calling. Is he the World Champion? Is that what it is? I guess it would be the World Champion. He's the champion now. He returned to TNA, Impact, whatever the fuck, and he beat Eli Drake at the tapings, and so he is the new champion. I believe, I don't think that's airing until the beginning of February, so we'll see how that plays out, I guess, if, well, I won't, but we'll see how that plays out on TV. I just wanted to mention this because there's a lot of moving and shaking going on in Impact right now. I have no interest in the product. I got to be honest with you. That is it's such a dead product right now. There's no buzz around it at all. I hear about New Japan. I hear about Ring of Honor. I hear about freaking PWG. I hear about all these different things. I hear nothing about Impact. And for their sake, I hope that Don Callis and Scott D'Amore know what they're doing and they can turn the ship around. How many times have we said that over the years? It's like a broken record. And even if they do it for a while, ultimately, you know, the ship gets a hole in it and the water starts to flood back in. And we're right back in the same boat that we were in before. So it's hard to get excited about any of this. And then you hear about Josh Matthews winning a championship and it's like, what the fuck? I know he used to wrestle, but that's not the point. Oh my God. So anyway, those are some of the big news bits as far as Impact goes this week. I wish him the best, because there's still a lot of people that work there. But it seems like every week that goes by, there's fewer and fewer people working there. They're sort of like rats jumping off the sinking ship looking to go elsewhere. I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of that. We have a monster mailbag here to get to. I'm more than making up this week for some of the shorter mailbags. Got a lot of questions. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. You can send your questions there. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll start with Jad from London, England. My mailbag question concerns Brock Lesnar's F5. In Lesnar's various title defenses, he has won all of them after only having to hit the F5 once. I, like you, believe this is being done so that when Roman Reigns inevitably kicks out of it at WrestleMania, it will seem like a bigger deal. But I've been thinking about it, and I wonder how relevant that actually is. I say this because at WrestleMania 31, before Seth Rollins cashed in Money in the Bank, Roman survived four of them. Why now are we supposed to think that he might lose after just one? Because they think we're idiots, that's why. They create their own version of reality. Whatever suits the story they're trying to tell. Of course, it is ridiculous. He kicked out of more F5s in one match, I think, than Brock Lesnar probably gave to people the entire year. And that was only 3 years ago. It may as well have been 30 years ago in WWE time. But we saw it at SummerSlam last year. He hit one F5 on Roman, and then that's all it took. So either the F5 is more devastating now than it was back then, or Roman just isn't as good as he was 3 years ago. I'll let you decide that. Scott in New Zealand, what are your thoughts on Don Callis in WWF as the character The Jackal in the late 90s? I always thought he had a great look and was amazing on the mic. Do you think WWE dropped the ball with him, and do you know anything about this mystery heat that he had? I thought they could have done more with him as this cult leader type heel manager. But the Truth Commission stuff was just DOA. I mean, that stuff was just dead on arrival. Boring as all hell. That group sucked. I mean, I wasn't really a fan of the whole gang warfare thing that they had going on in late 97. They had the Barriquas, and they had DOA, and they had The Nation, and they had the Heart Foundation. I at least like them. They had the Truth Commission, and there might be another one I'm not even remembering. I thought all that was just boring as shit. And the Truth Commission was just a terrible group. As far as him having heat, there's a couple of different versions of this. I know he had heat with JBL. I mean, who didn't, right? But he had heat with JBL. JBL would call him, like, Monkey Boy and would fuck with him because I guess he was a very quiet guy and he kept to himself, and JBL didn't like that, and he thought he was being very highfalutin And so he basically took it out on him. But Callis was on Steve Austin's show last year, and he talked about what the original plan was for his debut. And he was originally supposed to come in as a wrestler, as part of a tag team with Rick Martel, who, as I've mentioned many times on this show before, is far overdue for a WWE Hall of Fame induction. So he was going to come in as a team with Martel, and they were going to call themselves the Supermodels. Martel, though, at the very last minute, he took a better money offer from WCW, which is when he had that nice little run for himself as the television champion. He had some really good matches with Booker T until he got hurt in that Super Brawl match while he was wrestling Booker T. Booker threw him, I think it was on like a hip toss or something, and Martel's leg hit the ropes and it like fractured his knee. This guy is something else because he had to wrestle like another 5 or 10 minutes. He just kept going. Like, he wrestled the entire rest of the match, but the injury was so awful. The injury was so bad that it basically ended his career. He never came back after that. That was a very, very major, serious injury. And this guy finished the match, and it was amazing. Because I remember going back on, it was like Daily Motion at the time or something, and watching that, and it's like, where did the injury happen? It was on a very basic move. But you would never know that the guy was that seriously hurt. So anyway, but he took the money, and he went to WCW, and so he left Callis, unfortunately for him, he left him high and dry. And, you know, that got Callis heat with The Office because we weren't going to put any heat on Martel. Martel left, right? He's not coming in. So where does the heat go? It goes on him. So then he was supposed to manage the Hart Foundation. He was actually going to come in and be the manager for the Hart Foundation, but they ended up sticking him with the Truth Commission instead, which I have to say is quite the demotion from what he thought he was going to be doing. You know, because I guess Bret Hart was friends with him. Bret, I think, got him in to the company in the first place. So I could see, you know, him being a manager for them, Bret wanting to, you know, kind of do him that favor and work with him. And again, whether it was the heat or just plans change, whatever it is, he got stuck with the Truth Commission. If you hop on the Google machine, you can actually find videos of Don Callis and Rick Martel teaming up together, wrestling Edge and Christian, of all people, in 97. This was before, obviously, any of them came to WWE, which was later that same year. And maybe about a year or so before Edge and Christian came in. But yeah, you could find the match. I don't know if it was one match or a series of matches, but you just type it in, you'll find it. It's pretty cool to go back and watch. Kevin writes in from Parts Unknown, but he's a new listener. I'll cut him some slack. Last week, you had a mailbag question about Undertaker, and it got me thinking. Over the past few years, do you think money or financial circumstances played any kind of role in him continuing to perform? I'm sure Undertaker is still one of WWE's highest paid performers, and he's been there for decades, so I'm sure he's very well off. His situation is unique in that he really only appears for a couple of months out of the year. While again, I'm sure he has a high appearance rate, it's not as though he's been doing appearances and such that can add to his bank account outside of his base pay. Well, I don't know The Undertaker, and so it's not for me to sit here and say, you know, what his thought process is on that. And also, just because he's worked for WWE for all these years doesn't mean he's well off. I mean, I would think he is well off, but believe me, you don't know people's spending habits, and we've heard lots of stories of wrestlers who made a lot of money in their heyday, and now if they're not destitute, they're you know, they still have to work because they need the money. Or maybe they've been divorced and they have to pay their ex-wives. I mean, why do you think Flair had to keep working and had to keep doing convention appearances? The guy pays out $22,000 a month in alimony. He's got to make money somehow. You look at the career that Flair has had, you would think this guy's as well off as anybody. He shouldn't have to work another day in his life. Just the opposite. So, I mean, I don't get that sense from Undertaker that he's like a big spender and all that. But we don't know. I mean, I made the comment earlier, I guess the paycheck must be really good. I'm not saying Undertaker isn't passionate and doesn't just want to come back because it's in his blood and he loves the rush of the crowd and all that kind of stuff. But we've heard, you know, Undertaker could be making as much as $1 million a year. I mean, and maybe more on top of that when he actually does the Mania match in terms of whatever, you know, bonus he may get and all that kind of stuff. It's hard to turn down that kind of money, you know? If you think that, you know what, I don't feel great, but, you know, I'm going to train and get back in shape and I can do my one match a year and get my big $1 million paycheck, You know what? I don't know that there are many people out there who would turn that down. So I don't know that that his financial situation is such that he has to keep working. I just think, my opinion only, the money is probably really friggin' good. And it's just one match and a couple of TV appearances. And so, why not? And so it's hard to turn down that kind of money. But, I mean, you gotta be kidding me. If Undertaker started doing WrestleCon and Comic-Con and doing all these appearances, he would clean up. Believe me, he wouldn't have to work another day in his life. If he wanted to do those things, or do shoot interviews and that kind of stuff, or write a book, Undertaker can make a lot of money, put it that way, whatever the actual dollar amount is, if he wanted to. He always has the outlet there if he wants to. But I just think it's the big paycheck, man. I mean, you could be the richest man in the world. If somebody flashes all that money in your face, you're going to listen to what they have to say. So I think it's probably more a case of that and not a case of him, you know, blowing all of his money or making bad stock tips or something like that. Raymond the Mountie Medina. How about that? Raymond sending in a question here. Hearing the rumors of an XFL revival and the 25th anniversary of Raw got me thinking on the first Monday Night Raw of 1996, episode 141. Raw featured an NFL-themed Raw Bowl match with football-esque stipulations and god-awful announcing with football puns. This was cringeworthy to watch. Do you remember anything about this episode? Ah, yes, the Raw Bowl. It's been years since I've gone back and watched it. I watched it when it first aired in 96. I remember the number on the back of Yokozuna's uniform was his weight. I remember that. Which by that point was just completely out of control. I mean, he was well over 600 pounds. Whatever morbidly obese is defined as, he was like morbidly obese. I mean, it's amazing that he didn't just croak in the ring. I mean, I'm sorry to say, but the guy was gigantic. What else do I remember? I remember the canvas was made to look like a football field. I remember that. Each team was given one timeout in the match. They called the ring posts goal posts. I mean, between that and all the football puns on commentary, they were cheesing it up as much as they could. And when it was over, I remember this. When it was over, the winners were presented with the Lombardi Trophy. But it turned out to be the Steve Lombardi Trophy. And then they all just beat him up. So that's what I remember. I've pretty much blocked out the rest from my memory. Let's go all the way to Berlin for an audio question here from Marcus.
Hey, Solar Monster. I'm kind of fascinated by the fact there were bears in wrestling once upon a time. Do you think WWE would get away with it nowadays by, for example, stating the circus also uses trained animals, or would a shitstorm be too big to be bothered with bears?
So Marcus wants to know if WWE should use bears, if they should bring back the wrestling bear, which was a staple of a lot of territories back in the day. I think Bret Hart in his book talked about the wrestling bear up in Calgary. That's before my time. I never saw the wrestling bear or any matches with one. I think the whole concept is stupid, but I guess back then it was an attraction, I guess, right? I could see that being an attraction. As far as WWE doing it now, I mean, there's no way. And as far as the circus goes, I mean, they even shut down Ringling Brothers because everybody made a fuss about animal cruelty and all that. And the idea that WWE would even be able to get away with it if they wanted to is just beyond comical to me. But we did actually get a wrestling bear in WWE last year on Raw. He teamed up with The Miz, remember? So I don't remember what episode it was, but I do remember the bear teaming with The Miz. So believe me, that's the closest you're going to get to a wrestling bear in WWE. Tom from Great Neck, New York, what would you say to one last match between Kane and The Undertaker where both of them can then retire? I say if Undertaker wants to move to Knox County and run for mayor, he can have his one last match with Kane. In a wrestling ring, I have no interest in seeing that. Jay from the UK, if Sami Zayn was considered the heart and soul and Finn Balor the face of NXT, who do you consider to be the heart, face, muscle, and ass of the current NXT roster? With the heart and soul being the biggest babyface, the face being self-explanatory, the muscle being a monster or big man, and the ass being a heel of any kind. I can't say I've gotten a question like this before. I've heard of fuck, marry, and kill. I've not heard of heart, soul, face, and ass of, or I'm sorry, heart, face, muscle, and ass of a particular brand. Let's see here. Heart and soul, I would say, would be Johnny Gargano. Although I did briefly consider, when I was thinking about this, I did briefly think about Oney Lorcan. But I'll go with Johnny. Johnny could be the he could be the heart and soul. The face of NXT right now, I would say, is Aleister Black, right? I mean, who else would it be? The muscle of NXT seems kind of obvious, Lars Sullivan. And the ass of NXT, can I say Leo Rush? No, I'm kidding. I kid Leo Rush. I'll say Pete Dunne. I mean, Pete Dunne's not on NXT a lot, but to me, there are very few heels as good as him right now. So even in his limited appearances on NXT, more so than Almas and Adam Cole and some of those guys, I would go with Pete Dunne. James from Perth, Scotland. Do you think CM Punk would have headlined WrestleMania by now had he stayed? No, I don't. Manj from England. If Dean Ambrose wasn't in The Shield, do you think The Miz would have been good in that role? Absolutely not. Absolutely. Now, he wouldn't have fit in there at all. See, The Shield came in, right? When they came in, they were just like this bunch of badass rogues. That was sort of their whole gimmick. There is nothing badass nor rogue about The Miz. He makes, I think, a very good annoying heel. I think he had his best year last year. I've come around, you know, on him as far as being a fan, but Miz in The Shield is a total mismatch. Alex from Marin County. I've been following the WWE for a few years now, but I quickly discovered how much hardcore fans criticize and overanalyze the product. Every little booking decision is like the end of the world. Do you think that hardcore fans take it too seriously? Of course they do. Yes. That's what makes them hardcore fans, because they take things too seriously. Casual fans don't give a shit about like a slight change in somebody's theme song or what they're wearing, like, or that there's 30 women in the Rumble match instead of 20. They don't care. But like, therein lies the problem, I think. We as hardcore fans, we care too much. We want everything to be perfect, right? We're perfectionists. You know who else is supposedly a perfectionist? Vince McMahon. Why do you think he micromanages every little thing, every word that people say on TV? Why do you think he yelled at Braun Strowman backstage one time for saying title shot instead of title match? Okay, that's a story Mick Foley saw himself and told that story. I mean, the guy is out of his mind. Why would he do that? Because he's a nut. And so are we. And we all have different ideas of what's perfect, and Vince has his own ideas, and he's been successful for a very long time, but he's also getting a little senile, I think, in his old age. But you take two perfectionists with different ideas, and it won't end very well, okay? It ain't going to be pretty. So I think it's a love-hate kind of deal, right? A lot of fans love the product so much they hate it, if that makes sense. But I also think it's insulting, and I'm not like putting this on you, but I'm just saying, I think it's also a little bit insulting to think that, oh, because you're a diehard, because you're a hardcore fan, you don't have the right to criticize or complain about something. Just enjoy it. Just sit back and enjoy it. You don't have the right to speak out of turn. You know, WWE portrays itself as a television show like any other. How many times have we heard them compare themselves to Gunsmoke and ER and all these other TV shows, right? That's how they think of themselves. They're just a television show. They're not a wrestling company. They're not a wrestling promotion. They're not a fight promotion like a UFC or something. They're a television show. That's how they like to portray themselves. Well, if I'm watching a bad television show, I have as much right as anybody to talk about it and why I think it's so bad or what I think can be done to improve it and make it better. So, you're right. We definitely overanalyze certain things. We analyze certain things to death. But that also doesn't disqualify us from having an opinion and voicing that opinion when we think that there's something that needs to be called out. We need more people to speak up, not less. You have a voice. If you don't use it, then what's the point? Christophe from Strasbourg, France. I hope I pronounced that right. Triple H gets a lot of heat for his 2002 to 2005 Reign of Terror, and he deserves 99% of that. But I watched the 2003 Royal Rumble match with him and Scott Steiner for the world title, and what a horrible match it was. I kind of felt sorry for Triple H because Steiner was horrible with the no-selling, the botches, and the boring succession of suplexes. Was this one of the worst world title matches in history, and was Scott Steiner the original mayor of Suplex City? Well, I think Dr. Death. I think Steve Williams was probably the original mayor of Suplex City, even before Steiner, and Taz and all of them. And yeah, it's absolutely one of the worst world title matches that I've ever seen. You're not exaggerating when you say that. That match was atrocious. And to think, you know, what came immediately after that match on that pay-per-view? Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit for the WWE title. I don't know that that's ever happened before. On the same show to have one of the worst title matches of all time go back to back with arguably one of the best title matches of all time. That Angle Benoit match was a masterpiece. The best match those two ever had. Right on down to the standing ovation that Benoit got when the match was over. Everything about it was just total class all the way through. And I think that could actually be a fun little exercise, trying to see if there's ever been another show, another pay-per-view where that's happened before, where you had just an absolutely horrendous title match back-to-back, the way that those two matches were literally back-to-back, with, you know, this just outstanding 4 or 5 star match. I'm trying to think of other examples. I mean, maybe last year's WrestleMania, actually. WrestleMania 33 might be a good example of that, although I would hardly call Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg one of the best title matches of all time. But you had that terrible Bray Wyatt-Randy Orton match for the WWE title, and then immediately followed that up with Lesnar and Goldberg for the Universal title, which I thought was awesome for the time that it lasted. But I know that's not the best example, but maybe somebody can come up with some other ones like that. Johnny from Wynn, Arkansas. Should Terry Runnels return for the 25th anniversary of Monday Night Raw and side with Goldust again? Reunite Goldust and Marlena for one night? Sure. Sure. I mean, I don't know how Goldust and Marlena would feel about that. I don't know what their relationship is like these days, if they're cordial with one another. It could even be just a funny backstage thing. I mean, I'm not saying she should come out and manage him for a match or anything like that. You know, maybe Scott Hall's going to be there, right? Okay. So, well, we hope he's there. Well, maybe Scott Hall is there hanging out with Kevin Nash, and when all of a sudden Goldust sidles up to him, wig and all, looking like he did back in 96 when he feuded with Razor Ramon. And all of a sudden the camera pans over a little bit and we see Marlena smoking a cigar. And they could do like a quick little callback to the Razor Goldust feud from 96. Like something like that, I think, could absolutely work. Tyler from Toronto. Do you think Cody Rhodes will ever follow in his father's footsteps and join the NWA? Maybe become NWA champion. It's been a long time since we've seen a popular father-son championship reign since Curtis Axel's push in 2013. I don't. I think he's very happy splitting his time between Ring of Honor and New Japan. He just signed an exclusive deal with Ring of Honor, so he's not going anywhere. If this had come a year earlier, maybe Billy Corgan could have gotten Cody as his first NWA champion instead of Tim Storm, but didn't work out that way, you know. And I don't know how big of a deal that is to Cody. To have that title at this point, you know, if he really wants to do it, then I guess when his contract is up, he'll do it. But my bet would be no. Anthony from Illinois. I was listening to Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard when going to sleep one night and thought I had heard Pritchard say Jim Ross and the other announcers would pee their pants during shows because they couldn't take bathroom breaks, hence why they wear black pants. I woke up the next day and found out that indeed he did say that. Is there any truth to JR and others going number one in their pants, Jesus Christ, during events? Well, I mean, hey, always better to be number one than number two, I say. I've heard JR confirm what Pritchard said, so the answer is yes. At least he confirmed the part about wearing black and why they wear black. I think, I don't remember where Jim Ross was being interviewed. It was some television sports show somewhere. Sometime in the last, like, year or two. And he was talking about this, and I think the word he used was darks. He was like, you know, we wear darks to make it less obvious if we have an accident. And he was talking about how, like, during the pay-per-views, you don't drink a lot of water. They're like, well, don't you drink a lot of water? You're an announcer. You have to keep your voice, your throat moist and not dry. And he's like, well, you only drink hot water or warm water, never cold, right? Because that constricts. And you only take sips. He was like, you only take little sips here and there because if you drink too much, you got to go to the bathroom. Obviously, the older you get, and JR is not a young guy anymore, the older you get, the more you're probably going to have to go to the bathroom. So it was interesting hearing him as an announcer kind of talk about these little tricks and these little tips. But it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, JR always wore black. Howard Finkel wore black. Although I guess for Fink, it may have been less of an issue, but they all wore black, right? There's no bathroom breaks during a 3-hour show or a 4-hour show. WrestleMania last year was 7 hours. I don't know how those guys did that. You had a big stadium like that. I doubt that there's a bathroom nearby that they could just go to real quick, like during a video package, and then run back. I don't think Michael Cole had time to go find a bathroom and make it back in time to be at the announce table. So that's a problem. I mean, that's a real... And plus, at WrestleMania, it's not even like they're sitting off to the side like they do on Mondays. Those guys are at ringside. I mean, that ramp alone, like the guys coming down the ramp, is like 80 yards. I mean, Cole would have to, like, go through the crowd, and they're not doing that. That show is 7 hours long, including the pre-show from start to finish. That is insane. So, yeah, the announcers, they're stuck, unless you're Booker T. That one time on TV where you just walk backstage, you do your business, and you come back out. Booker don't care, right? But most guys can't do that. Michael Cole can't do that. I remember Joe Buck once. I know a lot of people hate on Joe Buck. I like the guy. But he told the story one time Joe Buck did about having to piss in a garbage can during an NFL game. Because he didn't have time. They were coming back from break. He had to do something. Couldn't hold it in anymore. Somebody handed him like an empty water bottle. He's like, that ain't going to do it. And so he grabbed the garbage can. He pissed in the garbage can. I mean, you do what you got to do. It probably, I'll be honest with you, probably wouldn't be a bad idea to wear like an adult diaper for some of these longer shows. I mean, I don't wear one when I do this podcast, and I've done 4-hour shows before, but you know, I also have the luxury of sort of just hitting pause and going to do my business. I don't have the luxury. I have that luxury. These guys don't. But like wearing an adult diaper for some of these longer like pay-per-view shows, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them already do. They might not admit to it, but I'm not even joking when I say that. I would not be at all surprised if some of these guys are out there wearing, like, Depends or something because, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's an embarrassing thing. Even if you do wear darks, nobody wants to wet themselves. You know, they make adult diapers for a reason. Greg from Providence, Rhode Island has a buy or sell on the WWE versus New Japan match that you would like to see more. John Cena versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, or Brock Lesnar against Minoru Suzuki. I feel like Lesnar and Suzuki would be a pretty horrible match, honestly. Like as a match, I think it would be terrible. But yet, I want to see that match way more than Cena and Tanahashi. So I'm buying on Lesnar and Suzuki. The thing about Lesnar and Suzuki is at least it would be short. Like, I don't see those guys going longer than 10 minutes. But like, those 5 or 10 minutes that it lasts would probably be pretty wild. But like I said, as a match, I don't know. I feel like those two in the ring would be pretty rough together. And lastly here, Dan the Man from Niagara Falls, New York. I believe that Chris Jericho's feud with Shawn Michaels in 2008 was his absolute best. However, I find his feud with Chris Benoit in 2000 leading into 01 to be very underrated. Buy or sell on the better ladder match, Jericho Michaels at No Mercy 2008, for the World Heavyweight Championship, or Jericho Benoit at Royal Rumble 2001 for the Intercontinental Championship. Both fantastic matches, and I'm going to buy on the ladder match with Jericho and Benoit from the Royal Rumble in 01. I think that's one of the better ladder matches in company history. I'd put that one right up there with Shawn and Razor. I'd put that up there. Rock and Triple H had a great one at the Garden at SummerSlam back in 98. Obviously, some of the TLCs. Of the TLCs they did, I always liked TLC 2 WrestleMania 17 the most. So, like, when I think of ladder matches, those are some of the great ones that come to mind, and Jericho Benoit's right up there. I mean, I would put that in the top five of best ladder matches probably in company history. That's just the... And the thing that stands out the most to me about that match was Jericho putting Benoit in, I think it was a tarantula, right on top of the ladder. Because that could have gone sideways very quickly. That thing tips over one way or the other. It's dangerous up there. I mean, I'm afraid of heights, so if that were me, I'd be like JR. I'd have to wear darks because there's no way. I'd probably die is what would happen. I'd have a heart attack and I would just fall. I would plummet face first down to the mat. These guys are up there. They're doing submission moves. They're wrapping each other around the ladder. But that's the spot that I remember the most. He put him in the walls. It was almost like a tarantula. Maybe it was a tarantula, but it was right on the very top of the ladder and everybody's going nuts. It's just a great, great match. So I'm going to buy on that one. And we'll end things there. Bigger mailbag than usual. I'm trying to fit as many questions in as I can, but we'll open the mailbag back up next week. So if you have questions, keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is the place to go. We've gotten a lot of new followers there, so hello to all of our new followers. A lot of new subscribers on the YouTube channel as well. We are climbing towards 31,000 now. The New Japan Wrestle Kingdom review is up there. Obviously, in a couple of weeks, there will be a full Royal Rumble review a few hours after that show ends. So now would be a good time, if you haven't already done so, to go ahead and sub to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/thesolemonster. That way, when a new video goes up, it will hit your sub boxes. You will be the first to know, and you can go ahead and enjoy all the video content on there. We are going to, I guess next week is the final sound off before Raw 25. So any news heading into Raw 25 that I haven't already covered, we'll talk about that on the show next week. We have TakeOver coming up as well the following week, along with the Rumble. So it's quiet right now, but there is a lot of good stuff coming up. The Mixed Match Challenge, easy for me to say, starts this week. Again, it's one match a week, about 20 minutes, so I'll talk about that on the show next Sunday, plus all the other big breaking news stories that I'm sure there will be. Thank you for your support here in the new year. Thank you for sticking with me. Keep spreading the good word and vote in the Wrestling Radio Awards, WrestlingRadioAwards.com. Until next time, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week, and I'll see you back here for 531 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster. But it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face. Oh, oh my God. What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Solemonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.